I like that everyone's on time, 3 minutes before we start. Excellent. You made a real good first impression. But I'll wait a couple of minutes in case there are some latecomers. So it's usually we won't be in this room, but today, since the equipment wasn't working in KO105, I got this room instead so that we can have a recording. But we'll usually be in a bigger room so that everyone can fit inside the room. By the way, does anyone have a whiteboard marker that I can borrow? Because it seems like it's missing in this room, so I can't use the whiteboard. If anyone has a whiteboard marker, please, can I borrow it? If not, I'll have to go in the break and or while you're working in groups to find one. It should not say permanent, because then I will get in trouble. No one? Okay. 2 more minutes. This might work. Okay. Jeg lar den. Litt større. Du skal be om å få den tilbake etterpå. Det kan jeg ikke glemme. Jeg har det litt travelt, for jeg skal nå en buss til Gardermoen etterpå. Okay, let me start. So, as I said, I managed to get this room just for the recording, so for the benefit of who might be following the live stream and look into recordings later, we'll have the recording also from this, even though this will be a more interactive part, so it's not only lecturing. So about this course. So this course is about preparing for handling those types of cyber attacks that I went through last lecture. And what do you think you need to do to be prepared? Do you have any ideas? That's what we're going to figure out now. So I want to start by dividing you into some groups, and we're going to perform a game storming thing called the 4 Cs, playing a game. So let's imagine that you are in charge of information security planning and incident response at NTNU. What should you do to be prepared? So you want to structure this in a way where one group is looking at components, one group is looking at characteristics, one is looking at characters, and one is looking at challenges. So I'm going to split you into 4 groups. And this is kind of, it's a bit rushed and a bit structured so that we don't use a lot of time on this part. The first thing you need to do when you with your group is to plan on how to gather information, because you're going to present this to the class afterwards. At least one volunteer in each group should present. You can also divide between you if you want to. And then you use 5 minutes to gather the information that you want to present. Then you use 3 minutes to analyze or categorize, figuring out. Like, so I'll give you these oversized post-it notes that that you can write down some stuff on, that you can put on the whiteboard when you do the presentation, which is 3 minutes. So it's kind of short and hectic, but I hope this gets you thinking a bit. So what does components mean? Components, that's everything that's part of doing incident response and planning for handling incidents. Everything you should have in place in your organization. So for instance, an intrusion detection system would be some sort of component that can help you in this. Characteristics, it's a little bit more, I think that's the one that's most hard to explain, because it's features, qualities, or things that characterize the area you're working in. So for instance, when it comes to handling cyber attacks, one characteristic could be the nature of or how quickly you need to respond. That's a characteristic. So you need to have the components in place to do a response. But how, what are the restraints, the things that are, that you have to live with when you're doing the response? You might have to live with that it takes a while before you can patch systems, for instance, because you cannot just roll out new patches into production straight away. That's one characteristic. Is this clear? And also, like, you have a lot of students in NTNU. One characteristic could be how the students behave, for instance. Characters, that's maybe easier to explain. That's who are involved in this. So looking at the people, who are on your team, who do you need to relate to, who do you need to interact with, communicate with, have agreements with, and so on. And challenges, that's all the different challenges that you're facing in doing this. Okay, are you clear? Maybe it's a bit too big to have only four groups. I see you 30 people now. Yeah. Maybe a group size of four is best. So I just quickly. So then we have two groups looking at different. So we can have more than one group looking at one of these aspects. So you four, you look at the components. You four, characteristics. I can take five in this group. You're looking at characters. You five, challenges. And then we have, maybe I want to have two groups looking at challenges. So you four in the first row, also challenges, because there's a lot of challenges. And components and characters. Then you have 3 minutes to plan, and I'm starting the clock, so get going. So you get one post-it note each that you can use for a presentation. So you can use one post-it. Here's a huge post-it for you. Excuse me. Post-it note for you to use for your notes when you present. Här är en post-it. Okay, now you're over in information gathering stage. 5 minutes. Okay, you got one minute left. 1 minute, and then everyone should be ready to present something. Okay, then we're done with your brainstorming or structured brainstorming. I would like each group to come up and present what they figured out. So because even though only one is talking, I would like the whole group to come up, and I would like to hear your names too. I'll sort of interview you with this microphone. So first group, please. Okay, so I'm really excited to hear what you figure out in so short time and without studying a lot beforehand. Before we start, can you just say your names?
Stian.
Lars. Burger.
Ahmed.
Okay, nice to have you in my class. You're on components? Who is talking?
Vi har...
Så
koselig. Vi har satt opp, vi har delt opp I to forskjellige kolonner. Da har vi satt opp hardware og software. Da har vi satt opp brandmurer.
Og...
Even nicer.
We've set up in two different thingies. Where we have split them between... hardware and software, and we on the hardware we have firewalls, backup systems, and hazard warnings, and on devices. On the software we also have firewalls, when we have IPS and IDS, and backup of data, and network logging. Customize configurations on switchers and routers, and then we have patching of servers and clients.
Excellent. Any questions? No? Okay. Thanks. Next group. So, you guys? So, before you start, could you just present yourselves?
Your names.
Benny. Eivind.
Sebastian.
Very nice to have you here. I can't promise to remember your names. Sorry, I'm really bad remembering names, but I'll try. So, what are you? Focus up.
Characters.
Okay. Go ahead.
We tried to get all different people involved in the case of an information security incident. We decided that, first of all, you would need the involvement of the principal of NTNU, and you would need the director of IT, the director of the IT department, who is in contact with the principal. You'd need someone who's responsible for PR, so to speak, a communications person who could relay to, for example, the upper management and to the media what has been going on, so that all the information pertaining to the incident doesn't just stay internal to the incident response team. You'd need someone who's responsible for economy, who's in contact with the economy department of NTNU, to estimate losses, to estimate cost of various responses, to estimate the cost benefit of implementing defenses to prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future. You'd also need more technical people, like an analytical team, to analyze what exactly has happened. This analytical team could be either an in-house team or just a single person who's working to break down the nature of what just happened. Or it could be an external analytical team that you contract to investigate the incident. And you'd also need someone who's in charge of the physical aspects, like what's an example of NOKAS, yeah, for example, are in charge of the physical aspects. It could be a physical break-in of some kind. They could be have walked in with a USB stick and stuck it right in. You need a legal person who's who can write up legal documents and decide if there's something illegal has happened. And you need to have a contact person at all of your different external contractors. Something else, Petter? She said you are on, by the way.
Okay. Thank you. So next group, you're in the back there. Super. So, just start the talk again. So, please.
Yes.
I'm Lasse.
I'm Bent Håkon.
Welcome. Who's talking? Okay, so it's between you.
We're on and very important characteristic is the response time. That is very important. Does this even work in a...
Yeah. You can have it
another important characteristic is the amount of people on NTNU. There's a lot of students and a lot of staff, which means there is also a lot of information, which makes us a nice target for people that wants to steal information or do other things. And also that we are spread over a huge geographical area. We're both here in Juvik and in Trondheim. Anything more you want to add, Lasse?
No.
No.
Okay. So, what type of information do you think is most valuable to attackers and to you?
Information about personal information about the students or the employees or their
grades, for example, or or finding a solution for an exam before it's out.
And also a lot of research going on.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, it's on.
Yeah. So, you can just say your name.
My name is...
What did you say?
Andres.
Daniel.
David.
Jaime.
So, you're the international group.
Yes.
Where are you from?
Spain.
Spain.
Germany.
Germany.
Okay,
nice to have you here.
Okay, we are talking about the characters.
Characters?
Yes. Yeah. And we decided that there should be a boss, a head that you can blame in case something goes wrong.
Yeah,
I think it's important. Then there should be a team like monitoring and seeing if someone is attacking or where, and also another team looking at that information and seeing why they're attacking, who, where, to make a better structure, and maybe another team like attacking and seeing if it's good the defense of the security information. And that's it.
That's,
yes.
The other group mentioned some other.
Yeah, they mentioned so low. Yeah.
I'm sorry about the. This will be a bit strange in the recording because we forgot to put the microphone all the time. So, please, you don't want to come up. Okay, so let's take you first then, and we wait for the whole group to be ready. So, first your names.
Ole Martin.
Fredrik.
Fredrik.
Lynn-Marie.
So there are a few different challenges. One of them is factors outside of our control. It could be vulnerabilities that we can't do anything about. It could be things like bring your own device. It's quite challenging to enforce that, and you could have also students or staff going from one campus to the other. You have different networks and get on, at least here. It can be quite difficult to respond to an incident, if that means taking the network offline or something like that, because it reaches a lot of people instantly. And because we're students as well, people also access this outside of office hours. So it's more difficult to do this stuff during the evenings and so on as well. You have fairly high values, but it's being handled by people with very, varying kind of computer skills. You need to communicate with loads of different groups, and you have to, do that with different interests. So you have to communicate to staff, to students, and you have to also maintain your reputation. So all this has to be done at once. And if there's an incident, you have to respond maybe across departments and locations as well. And you also, it's quite difficult to secure the physical access to to this place. Anyone can walk in and just plug into the network. Yes, that in particular. Perfect. Yeah, I forgot that one. Yeah, I think that's the basics.
Okay. Thanks a lot. There's still missing one person in the last group. Are you sure you don't want to present without it? Okay. That's noted. Let's hope that we can end. We have 6 minutes left of the I think I want to just continue and go back to this. First, I want to ask you if you all got this book. Is it available in the bookshop? Okay, so it might be available for sale by all students too. I know it's a little bit expensive. This edition is from 2000. It's the second edition, 2014. So there should be some examples of this book from previous students around. But I really recommend that you get hold of this book, because I'm basing
this course almost completely on this book, or this book is almost the whole of this book is part of the course syllabus. There's also more teaching material that I put on Fronter. So there are some articles that I would like you to read. And at the end of each lecture, I'm going to have a reading recommendation for you to prepare for the next lecture. So I would really appreciate if you do that, because then we can have more interesting discussions if you have prepared yourself. And since I'm commuting from Trondheim to Gjøvik, I've arranged this course as seminars, like we have today, with 4 hours each time. That means that there's not a lecture every week, as I guess you noticed on the time edit. It's the first few weeks there is every second week, and then we have a quite long break. And what I want you to do is to focus on the project work, of course, during those weeks when there are no lectures. And I'm going to come back to the project work. Also, please check that you have access to Fronter room, because that's where I put all the material. So I've already put the PDF version of today's lecture in Fronter, in case you want to have a look at that. I'm going to use Kahoot quizzes as part of the course too. I hope you think that's fun. We're going to have a quiz later on today, so you can feel a little bit motivated by trying to pay attention, and then you might win chocolate if you're the best one in the Kahoot quiz. Yeah, and also in this book, there's a lot of very good hands-on exercises. It's not part of the curriculum, in a way, to do the hands-on exercises, but I really recommend that you do them, because then you can learn a lot more than just reading text, theoretical text. And a lot of these exercises are really fun, too. I know there are other courses that go more into intrusion detection systems in particular. But if you do install the Security Onion, that is recommended to do some of these hands-on exercises, you will have access to a lot of intrusion detection tools, and you can actually use them yourself. If you have problem installing Security Onion, I put a link to a walkthrough. I haven't actually checked if that link still works. It worked last year. I hope it still works. But anyway, whenever you download something from the internet and install it on your computer, please do verify checksums, because often security tools, and this is not really a hacking tool, but security tools and also hacking tools will often come with malware installed in them if you're not careful of where you're downloading these things from. So do take notice of that. And there's the project work. So 50% of the grade is based on your exam, and 50% is based on the project work. So project work is a big part of this course. And we're going to start with the project work kickoff the next time. And before that kickoff, you need to have formed groups. So that's before next time, you need to form a group. If you're a bachelor student, if you're a master student, it's not a group work, it's an individual work. But I prefer to have groups of 3 students. 4 can be acceptable, but if you are 4 students, you need to write a really long report, because it's like an amount of pages is multiplied with amount of students in the group. 2 students also works, but then your report will be a little bit smaller. For the master students, it's an essay that should be written, and the essay is on your own chosen topic, which is should be within the topic of the course, of this course. So I need to pre-approve the topic
before you start writing. And much more to come about the project work next time when we have the kickoff. And also my student assistant, Konstantin, will be here next time. And he will be working with me, particularly helping you with the project work. And I will publish a project guide on Fonter that you can read with details. Any questions before we take a break? And before we hear the last group. So, no, you're not off the hook. You need to come up. And these are some very important dates that I also put on Fonter for you. So back to the... So the last group, it's your honor to finish before lunch, before coffee break. First the names.
Simon. Philip.
Thomas.
Velkommen.
We had, the components. So, we would have user systems, or I don't know what you wrote, have like minimal amount of services on a computer, and logging to, know what's going on our system. That was all we wrote.
That's users and systems. That's user systems. There isn't really that much more to say about it.
Okay. Yep. Any more things? No. Okay. Thanks. Then I'll take a picture of this, and you have a break, and we start again. Quarter post one.
Okay, let's start again. So now it's going to be a little bit more traditional lecture the next hour, but we'll end by having a Kahoot quiz the last 10 minutes. So if you pay attention, chocolate might be within reach, okay? So any questions, by the way, to important dates and how I structure this course? So please pay attention to time edit, because the timing might change. Actually, the next time is not going to be 9 to 11 and then 12 to 2. It's going to be 10 to 2 without any lunch break between. So already be warned, it's a change in the schedule for next time. And this also makes it easier if someone is coming in the train from Oslo, like I did today. I had a really hurry to get there in time, so it's better to start at 10. But we won't have this nice lunch break then, so that you know that. Okay, so topic now is risk management. Who of you have already been through a course in risk management? Nice, so then you know all this from beforehand, so we can go really quick through it and just race through all the slides, and you can read it all yourself. Yeah, good. Well, risk management is the process of finding, identifying your vulnerabilities and taking steps to ensure that you're protecting your assets in your information systems. And of course, this relates a lot to being prepared for handling incidents and contingency planning, as we call it in this course. So what's the difference then between risk management and risk assessment? Can anyone explain that to me? Maybe by the help of this figure? Have you seen this figure before? No? It's from an ENISA deliverable that I listed on the reading list for the course. So they explain how risk assessment is just occasional thing you do within the risk management process. So risk assessment is when you sit down and you actually do a risk assessment of your asset, find your assets, figure out vulnerabilities and so on. And you can't do this all the time. But the problem is that the threat landscape and the risks are constantly evolving. So we have a dynamic world. So even though you did this risk assessment and you found all your vulnerabilities and figured out what you needed to fix at one point in time, this is no longer true when everything has evolved. So you need to do this repeatedly. And you need to do it, and you need to have a plan for when you do it. And this is the risk management part of it. So you implement the controls, you monitor what's going on, and then you have to do more risk assessments as new threats arise and things happen. And you need to identify new risks, and you need to assess them again and repeat this procedure. So how does all this go together? So risk management is a kind of overall term. What you do inside of the risk management is to identify risks, and it is to control risks. So identification of risk is what you do when you do risk assessment. When you inventory all your assets, you figure out what types of assets you have, what assets need to be protected, and then also identify the threats and vulnerabilities. And when you have done this, you need to select the strategy and figure out how to deal with all these threats and how to control it. So that's two different aspects of risk management. So this is typically how you go ahead and do the risk identification first and then the risk assessment. So first you need to have a plan in place for how you're going to do this. So plan and organize the process, figuring out how to do this categorizing of all your system components and see what you have, inventory them, identify threats, specify what are the vulnerable assets, and then figuring out how likely it is that you'll actually get be attacked, that these vulnerabilities that you identified are exploited by someone. And then you can, if you have some estimates, it's possible to do this quantitatively, which means you can put in numbers and do risk calculations and find a risk factor for all of your assets. And then review, figuring out what to do to protect it. And then you can actually do the quantitative analysis all over again after you put protection mechanisms in place. And you can quantify how much you reduce the risk. And all this needs to be documented, of course. So the first challenge is to categorize all your system components, which can be a bit hard. You have to figure out what you have and what categories they are in. Some examples are you have a server, but at the same time you have lots of things running on that server. Maybe you should also categorize and inventory all the software that's on your, all the different systems and all the software that's running on your servers. Maybe something is up in the cloud. You have a cloud service provider. It's not always physical systems. So you need to also inventory the things that are not tangible, which can be a little bit hard. But you can think about them as information assets instead of physical objects or things. So think about what is the information that you have and where is the information stored. So it might contain, for instance, a customer list, information about the customers, and this could be categorized as your assets. And then you need to figure out how important are these different assets to your organization, because that's how you figure out what to protect. You need to protect the things that are most important, and maybe you can have different protection mechanisms in place, and some you might want to spend more money on protecting the more valuable assets to your organization. These are some questions that you can ask yourself when you try to prioritize assets. So as you see, it's not a really easy task, because you need to know the organization pretty well to be able to answer some of these questions. What's most critical to the organization's success? Try to think about that in terms of NTNU. So NTNU has a lot of assets that you should protect. What's the most important thing to protect? What do you think? The grades of students, maybe? Or the research results of the researchers? There's a lot of things to consider here. Where should you spend the most money? If you have if you're in charge of IT, you have a limited budget. You need to protect all these assets, but you might not have enough money to hire consultants to do full penetration tests of every single server on the network, for instance, if that's what you're plan to do. Typically, in a commercial business, you can think about what's the thing that generates most revenue or profit. What would be most expensive to replace in case it got compromised? What's most expensive to protect? If you have something that's really expensive to protect, maybe you can think about getting rid of that information instead of having to protect it, not collecting this type of information. That could be the case, for instance, if you're if you are a health care organization and you have a lot of sensitive patient information, maybe you don't need to have all this information. And also think about the PR effects and what would be most embarrassing if something happens. Maybe it would be very embarrassing for NTNU if students were able to change their grades. Or maybe that would attract more students, I don't know. Do you think? Maybe not. Could be a really PR disaster. And also, of course, you need to comply to the laws and regulation. So it's not always up to the company or the organization or business what they need, what kind of measures they need to have in place. So in Norway, it's Datatilsynet, the Authority for Protection of Citizens' Privacy, has some. There are some quite strict laws on what you can do with the personal information, and you can actually end up having to pay fines if you don't protect personal information as you should. So how can we calculate the relative importance of the different assets? I'm going to go through an example which is also in the book and try to explain how this is done in this example. And keep in mind that this is just one example of how to do this. There are loads of different frameworks and models and ways to calculate risks. But this is one thing that you might want to reuse in your project, so you can pay attention to this. So in this example of weighted factor analysis, we want to figure out what's most important to protect in a company. And in this weighted factor analysis, we're looking at some aspects that we care about. One is impact to revenue, impact to profitability, and public image impact. So in case someone compromises these assets, what could be the consequence? And for this example, we have chosen to weight the criteria number 2 more than the others. So you see that the sum here is 100. So we have 100 points, or whatever how you like to think about them, and you can weigh the different factors differently depending on what you think is most important for your organization. So in this case, the people that were doing the analysis thought that profitability is the most important. And here are some examples of assets that have been identified in this company already. So the company has an asset called the logistics BOL. That's the bill of landing. It's so the company is sending out some things to their customers. This is outbound. So whenever they send an item to their customer, they also supply this document. Another asset is the supplier orders, which is important. And then we have the supplier fulfillment advice, which is inbound. And customers, they order via SSL, So there's a website running on SSL where the customers can put their orders. So this is one of the assets. And then there are customer service requests via email. So all these things are identified as important assets for the company, for their business. So let's see how we look at the first column in this value factor analysis. What would be the impact to revenue in case these assets are compromised? So the revenue is really depending on customers being able to order stuff. So that's why this asset has got 1.0 as like 100% impact. While other parts of the other assets that are used are not that critical. For instance, it's not so critical to the revenue of the company that the customer service via email is working at all times. So customer service got 0.4. You follow this? Yeah? And the next column, impact to profitability. In this case also, you can't really have a lot of profit if you don't get customers or the customers can't order anything. And here you also need to have like the documents that follow the logistics are more important. But still customer service requests are not that important for the profitability. So these are a bit similar, but if you look at public image impact, that's different. So here you see that customer service requests via email got 0.9. Means that your public image will be impacted in case customers cannot get any answers to their requests or complaints. In this case, the inbound document is not that important, but still you need to have your website up and running to have a good public image. So how do we calculate then the weighted factor? What's the most important asset for the company based on this? It's pretty easy. You just multiply the different impact values with the weighted factor, which is in the top, criterion weight. And then you get the number, which is the weighted score. So as you see here, you will get 100 for customer order because you got 1.0 on all of them. So that's the most important asset. So that means when you prioritize what to protect or care about most when you're implementing risk mitigating factors, you should maybe spend most on this. Okay? It's all clear? Easy? In case you didn't really follow this, it's also described in the book with more details and context. So that's one way of calculating or doing quantitative risk assessments. When you do a threat assessment, you need to figure out what is endangering your organization's assets. So first you look into yourself and you see, what do I have that's important? And then you look outwards, not into yourself, look at what's around me, who are threatening me and my assets. What represents the most danger to the organization's information? And also, you will have to think about, in case there's a real threat or an incident happening, how much will it cost to recover? And what's the most costly to prevent? And the way you do this is to look at each information asset and each threat it faces. list all your vulnerabilities and try to identify all the threats. And this typically will generate a pretty long list. And what's important to not forget is that also you won't be able to catch everything, because there are some risks and some threats that are unimaginable. And also it depends a lot on the people that are actually doing the risk analysis and risk threat analysis. What they can, how creative are they? How much can they think like a hacker? And how much do they know about the organization and the assets? So it's good to have a group of people with diverse backgrounds to do this type of analysis, collaborating. And then you can do the same type of exercise for the threats, or the you can assign values to attacks on assets and figure out what is actually would cost most to defend against and prevent. And you can, in the same way, get numbers out of this calculation. But typically, you would have... it's not always a quantitative analysis. You can do a qualitative analysis, and you can categorize in terms of low, medium, high, instead of having the numbers. So there are different ways of doing this, and I'm sure you all know about the risk metrics, and seen this picture with yellow, red, and green. Okay. SWOT analysis. You already been through this. Okay. Good. And here's one example from the NIST framework, which is not quantitative, but is more qualitative, where you have description of potential impact, and you try to figure out which one describes best your situation, and then you can put. Then you will have a like low, moderate, high on the different potential impacts. So it's not only the way that is described in the book that can be used, is what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of different methods. And there's a lot of pitfalls also when you're doing this type of analysis. But what you end up with is a likelihood of attack on vulnerabilities that you can estimate. And then when you do it, it's also very important to stick to one framework and one group of people, because you might not have the same, people will not usually use the same scale for everything. So in order to have something that can be used in a relative calculation, you need to base it on the same type of input. Have you seen this definition of risk before? There are more than one definition. This is the definition that is used in the book. That risk is the likelihood of someone exploiting a vulnerability times the value of that information asset minus the percent of risk that is already mitigated by current controls plus the uncertainty of current knowledge of the vulnerability. You might have seen this first one. Those two last ones are not always included in the calculation. Any questions to this? No? Good. And how do you control risk? There are different strategies that you can use. You can, of course, try to defend against all the threats. You can avoid also a threat. You can defend by adding components or stuff to your network, like intrusion detection systems, firewalls, and so on. But you could also mitigate a threat by training your personnel, training for incident response. So it doesn't have to be technological measures. You can also transfer risk. If you have a cyber insurance, you have transferred the risk. In case something happens, you can use the insurance and get help mitigating. Of course, mitigation of risk is what we're focusing on in this course. And that includes planning for security incidents to happen. And that's part of the contingency planning. Also, you can reduce the impact by having, for instance, an incident response team in place. Having a plan for how to respond and mitigate the risk when it or the threat when it happens. Of course, you can also accept risk. And that's unfortunately often the case. So organizations do all this risk assessment, risk management. It's presented to the CEO or the board of directors by the CISO or someone that was in charge of doing the risk assessment and threat analysis. And then the leadership says, okay, thank you for identifying how vulnerable we are. We just accept the risk and do nothing. And just wait and see what happens. So that's often the case, unfortunately. And also you can terminate risk by just removing an asset and for instance, not collecting data that you were previously collecting and not having it anymore. Some of you might have seen this before, the risk triangle. There is a little bit different way of thinking about the risk. In this model, you have three aspects of risk in each part of the triangle. You have the threat, value, vulnerability, and the larger the triangle, the bigger the risk. So what you want to do when you you want to do something about your risk because you have this large triangle of risk and it's red, it doesn't look good. You want to make it smaller. So what do you do? Can you do something about the threats? Can you make the threats smaller? That's usually quite not so easy to do. Requires a lot of police work and efforts. How about the value of the things you're protecting? Often very hard to do something about. That means we should try to reduce our vulnerability. You can do this by adding security mechanisms, plans and procedures, security policies, education and training of personnel, and so on. And then hopefully you will have a smaller risk triangle, and maybe this is more acceptable, and that's why it's green. Okay, but you still have some risk left. There's a cost-benefit analysis that is you always have to live with a limited amount of resources, so you cannot mitigate all the risks. So you have to live with some risk, and that's the residual risk, the remaining risk. And you think it's okay, we can run our business and we can live with this, we accept this. Any questions? No? You've seen this before too? Yeah, good. Maybe not seen this, that's a too big figure to explain. But if you read the NISA deliverable, you will see how all these different risk assessments, risk treatment, communication, awareness, monitoring, reviewing plans, how this all works together to mitigating and monitoring risks in an organization. But there's a lot of pitfalls, as I said, in quantitative risk assessment. So remember that every number in the equation has been estimated by someone. I was planning to do some more brainstorming using post-it notes, but we don't have the time. I want to do the Kahoot quiz, so we'll skip that. But maybe some of you can come up with something that's a problem with quantitative risk assessment. It's all good? It's the answer to everything? No? Okay, so for instance, a problem with the quantitative risk assessment is you have to, before you start, you define the scope. That's the often the first thing you do when you start doing a risk assessment. And sometimes the scope is not appropriate. You might look at the smaller part of the system, and then you sort of ignore things, and these things might be more important than you imagined before you started. No, it's a kind of general thing about risk assessment, I would say. It can be both problem and quantitative and qualitative. That you don't look at the right parts of the system when you're thinking about the vulnerabilities and threats. And often you tend to forget about the third-party risks. So you just think about what are the risks directly to you and your organization. Then you rely on your service providers. But if something happens to them, that's often not included or out of scope. Physical security is something that is often underestimated. You have all these measures in place to protect your servers, like lots of firewalls, intrusion detection, and expensive things. But then the cleaning lady can just walk in and put the memory stick in there. Human factors are oftentimes ignored. The social engineering aspect of attacks is often not something that has got enough focus. Of course, you can fail to identify all threats. I would say that's inevitable. You won't be able to think about all threats because new threats arise all the time and you have zero-day vulnerabilities and so on. You might not have the right people. And then at the end of the... when you have done the assessment, a very normal problem is that no one is acting upon the information. So no one is using the results and trying to do things better. It ends up in a report that is put into a drawer and no one is looking at it. So if you have plans in place for crisis plans and contingency plans, they need to be updated and they need to be actually used by the people. If you never have any training, if you never try to use them, it's often of no use. But at the same time, you need to have kind of creative people in place to handle crises when they occur. So you can't always rely on what's written in paper. Often you have to maybe do things that are not written policies for or written plans for because there's a new situation that no one ever thought about before. So that's also part of being prepared. So what is contingency planning? One of the topics of this course. It means to be prepared for unexpected, undesired events. It's prepared by the organization to anticipate, react to, recover from events that threaten the security of information and information assets in the organization. So it's both preparing for an incident, responding to an incident, and afterwards restoring to normal business again. What can the consequences be if you don't have a plan? Of course, as we went through earlier, loss of data, loss of information, costs, maybe even loss of your business if you're not prepared. Of course, negative media exposure and also liability and prosecution could be the result. So it could be really damaging. What are the components of contingency planning? It's more than the risk management and risk analysis. It's first business impact analysis, figuring out what's actually affecting your core business function in case an incident happens. incident response planning, planning for disaster recovery, and business continuity. So we'll go through all of this in this course. And the timeline is that first you should do the business continuity management as preparing for an emergency, and this is an ongoing process. But then, once in a while, an incident happens and you're disrupted, you have to engage your team and do incident response, and then, after a while, managing the incidents. And then you're back to planning again when an incident is done with. Here's another timeline picture. Sometimes an incident starts as a smaller incident, and then it develops over time to become a disaster, or maybe also threat to the business existence. And then you might have different plans for responding to the different types of incidents, like if it's according to how much it's affecting your systems. And if you want to compare risk management and business continuity, it's two different things. Business continuity is focused more on availability and impact, and looking into events that actually caused business interruption and how much it costs to recover from incidents. So the difference here is that the risk management look at anything, everything that can threaten the risks, threaten the assets, while in business continuity, we're looking at the more critical business processes and more catastrophic or more bigger incidents. Also, I won't go through this, but this is just illustrating how many different... if you have a really big organization, you might have a lot of different plans and teams involved in both looking at the contingency planning and risk in the business. And information security policy is a very important part of this. They are written to support the mission of the people in the organization that have the responsibility for doing the risk management and contingency planning. It's really important to have them in place so that someone is in charge, someone's to blame, as was said earlier today. And it should be focused on the management of risks, not really focused on technology that is used to mitigate risks. Just to scare you a little bit more, this is an example of how many different policies and plans and documents you can come across if you are in a quite big organization that belong to different business units. And all this, of course, needs to be updated and maintained and used. So it can be a lot of paper being produced in this area. Okay, I think we need to start a Kahoot quiz if you shouldn't run out of time. So, have everyone used Kahoot before? Do you know what Kahoot is? No. So what you can do is to take up your laptop or your phone or whatever and go to this URL. And then I will give you a game pin that you can sign into. You just create a nickname, just choose your own nickname, not too offensive, I hope. And then when you get the quiz options, it can be one or more alternatives that are correct, and you press the button on your device to choose one of them, and your point score depends on how fast you choose, and of course it needs to be correct too. So, this should be exciting to see if it works. if the internet connection is reliable. So obviously I need to end this show. Are you able to connect? Yeah, it says waiting for players. I thought there would be a kind of music playing in the background, but obviously not. Oh, there it is. Okay, I think we need to start. Is everyone in? No? Okay. So let's hope this still works. I created this a couple of years ago, and I can see that the design looks different. Let's see. Okay, everyone's ready? Start. It's only 5 questions, so it should be quick. What is this an example of? So press the color that is corresponding to the... That's the weighted factor analysis? Wow! 13 of you paid attention. Wow. Next. TLP Red is on top. Which of these steps are included in a risk assessment? So almost everything was included. So that was an easy one. TLP Red is still in the lead, but it's kind of close. What do we call the remaining risk after application of risk control strategies? That's residual risk. TLP Red is in the lead. Hey. 4 question. What does BIA stand for? That's business impact analysis. Okay, last question. TLP Red is at the first place, but it's a close race. So, good luck. What's the main difference between risk management and business continuity management? So both red and yellow was correct. No, let's see who won. TLP Red. Who is TLP Red? Hmm? No one must admit that they won a chocolate. Maybe someone on the live stream. Okay. Unfortunately, I can't send this over the internet. But the next one, let's see who is the in second place. Can I go back? Anyone remember who was? Oh, save results. Okay. And also, you can rate the game. Okay, someone got second place. Yeah. Okay, chocolate is yours. You got third place. Gratulerer. And congratulations to whoever was on the live stream. Okay, so see you in 2 weeks, and remember to form groups. If you don't succeed in finding a group, I will just place you in a random group with some other random person. So.
it's wrong. It is so there jämt. Testing. Can you hear me? Vad jag har att min flesta av mina studenter, de bor i Oslo. Ja, distansen är så dumt. Man känner sig så dumt står här. Och vi vet inte i förtid. Det är social technical enabled crime. Så det är alla polis som